thousand. He even suggested in his PhD thesis, selfish gene. Only if you're selfish that you will survive. And I have this book, which is much late, you know, so later than him, and also argues against his arguments. Okay, I have to read one or two lines here. Many have misunderstood Charles Darwin's view of natural selection on the origin of species, in his book on the origin of species, as a justification for the necessity of aggressive or ruthless behavior to survive. Actually, we can survive only if we care about each other, if we care for the weaker ones, like the parent caring for their children, caring for the elders, like that. Okay. So that's misunderstanding the survival of the fittest. I read from this book again. This is from Professor James Doty from Stanford University, who is a neurosurgeon and a professor there. We are going to be listening to his lecture, not the first one. The first one is from somebody who works on an ICU, a professor himself. May I read a few more sentences? In Charles Darwin's later published Descent of Man in 1871, he wrote, those communities which included the greatest number of the most sympathetic members would flourish best and would rear the greatest number of offspring. We are impelled to relieve the sufferings of another in order that our painful feelings may be at the same time relieved. So if you want to cope better with your stress and anxiety, you've got to be interested in other people's stress and anxiety. That's the point. If you don't, what's likely to happen is that when you have stress and anxiety, you will go into fight and flight mode. You know, animals which live in a herd, they care for each other so much. But when they are being hunted and when they have to run for their life, they don't care about each other anymore. If you like to watch some documentary about Yellowstone in America, the biggest natural park over there, the bison, you know, a huge one, about 25, 30 times bigger than wolves. That a pack of wolves can be very persistent in hunting, you know, bison, a bigger, much bigger animal. At the beginning, the bisons would stick together. But in the end, if one of them started getting scared and start running, that fear will spread. It's contagious. Then when they start running in the snow, they don't care about each other. And if one of them collapses, they will just walk over. This is how fear can, you know, impair your decision and your sense of connection with your fellow human being. You can't connect with each other anymore, even if you are brothers and sisters. It was evident that such practices had potential. There's compassion, okay? Sorry, I skipped something. What has become evident and what Kant, that Immanuel Kant from the philosopher Charles Darwin and Kropotkin allude, Kropotkin is the Russian scientist, allude to is that compassion characterized by nurturing and caring behavior is critical to the long-term survival of many species and most importantly perhaps to the human species. Over time, it was evident that such practices had the potential to promote what is at the center of Buddhist philosophy and that of most of the world religions, the cultivation of compassion. So with this, we are going to be at the Shia Milipin. We are going to be watching this video. It is not this one. It's 40 Seconds of Compassion. This is a professor who is in the ICU, okay, who works in the ICU for 20 years, but he himself suffered from a burnout. You know burnout. From time to time, you suffer from this during your exam. And he comes up with compassion as the answer. You see, a lot of research in this. Please take note of this, okay? I might ask if I have time. Take note of this. Thank you.
In my job, I meet people on the worst day of their life. I'm an intensivist, a physician who specializes in intensive care medicine. If you become my patient, it's because you need life-sustaining therapies in the ICU. Lately, I've been rethinking how I care for people. Let me tell you why. On February 27, 2007, on a snowy stretch of highway outside of Uppsala, Sweden, two buses collided head-on. This is what was left of one of the buses. Six people died, but miraculously, 56 people were saved. 5 years later, researchers asked the question, what do survivors remember? They interviewed every survivor, and using a rigorous qualitative research methodology, they found two common themes in the data. The first was expected, the physical pain that they felt at the moment of impact. But the other theme, a lack of compassion from the caregivers at all the hospitals. That's what they remembered 5 years later. These data have begun to open my eyes to a stark reality. In healthcare, we are in the midst of a compassion crisis. Scientists define compassion as an emotional response to another's pain or suffering, involving an authentic desire to help. It's different from sympathy or empathy, which are the feeling and understanding components, in that compassion also involves taking action. So here are the data. Research from Harvard University found that nearly 50% of Americans believe that our healthcare system and our providers are not compassionate. Two-thirds of patients have had a meaningful healthcare experience with a lack of compassion. Rigorous research show that 70% of opportunities for compassion are missed by physicians, and compassion comprises less than 1% of all communications by physicians to patients. These data are compounded by an epidemic of burnout in healthcare providers. Burnout is characterized by depersonalization, which is an inability to make a personal connection. And in the era of electronic medical records, rigorous research shows that healthcare providers spend more time looking into computer screens than looking patients in the eyes. Based on all of these data, I conclude we have a compassion crisis indeed. But here's the big question. Does it matter? Does compassion really matter? Now, you may say, of course compassion matters. We have a moral imperative. It's part of the art of medicine. And of course, I agree. But is compassion just in the art of medicine? Or are there also evidence-based effects belonging in the science of medicine? And what is the evidence? In addition to being an intensivist, I'm also a physician scientist. In other words, I'm a research nerd. I like data, and my hypothesis was that compassion matters for patients, for patient care, and for those who care for patients. So I went to the biomedical literature, and I used a methodology called systematic review. So over 2 years through the National Library of Medicine, I reviewed more than 1,000 scientific abstracts, more than 200 research studies in total. And today I share with you what I found. The effects of compassion on patients, on patient care, and specifically the cost of care, and on those who care for patients, our healthcare providers. There are more than 20 distinct mechanisms of action by which compassion can have beneficial effects on patients. Let's go to the data. Let's start with the practical. If you have compassion for patients, you may be more likely to be meticulous about their care or have higher quality standards and lower likelihood of making a major medical error. But there are also physiological effects. Compassion can buffer stress-mediated disease. Compassion can also modulate a patient's experience of pain. There are neuroendocrine effects. So in patients with diabetes, research shows that high physician compassion is associated with an 80% higher odds of optimal blood sugar control and 40% lower odds of acute metabolic complications. There are also immune system effects. So in a University of Wisconsin study, in patients with a common cold, high physician compassion, as rated by patients, was associated with enhanced immune response, shorter duration of symptoms, and lower severity of symptoms. And importantly, compassion can impact patient self-care. If you care deeply about patients, and they know that, they may be more likely to take their medicine. In a Johns Hopkins study of 1,700 patients with HIV, researchers asked patients, does your physician know you as a person? Knowing the patient as a person was associated with 33% higher odds of adherence to therapy and 20% higher odds of having no detectable virus in the blood. Compassion has also been associated with lower healthcare costs, which are a major factor in the health of our economy. In primary care, for example, research from the University of Rochester and UC Davis have shown that compassionate, patient-centered care is associated with lower discretionary resource utilization. So fewer diagnostic tests, fewer referrals to specialists, fewer unnecessary hospitalizations, and lower total healthcare charges. So here's the bottom line. If healthcare providers actually spend more time talking to patients, maybe we don't need so many tests and referrals. But what about time? We've all heard the expression, time is money, but time is also a vital factor in the efficiency and the economics of healthcare. So here's a staggering number, 56. Research from Harvard University shows that 56% of physicians believe they do not have time for compassion. This is in the context of a classic study from Princeton University on helping behaviors, which found that it wasn't the intrinsic belief of the importance of helping by the potential helper. It was whether or not the potential helper believed they had enough time to help. So how long does it actually take for a meaningful expression of compassion? To address this, researchers from Johns Hopkins University did a randomized controlled trial in patients with cancer who were having a consultation with the oncologist. And in this randomized trial, the primary outcome measure was anxiety. And if you have cancer, it's a pretty important outcome measure. So they found that patients randomized to a compassion intervention from the oncologist had less anxiety than usual care. So what was the compassion intervention? I could describe it for you, but instead I'm just going to read it to you. From the oncologist at the beginning of the consultation. I know this is a tough experience to go through, and I want you to know that I am here with you. Some of the things that I say to you today may be difficult to understand, so I want you to feel comfortable in stopping me if something I say is confusing or doesn't make sense. We are here together, and we will go through this together. And at the end of the consultation, the oncologist said, I know this is a tough time for you, and I want to emphasize again that we are in this together. I will be with you each step along the way. So how long did that take? They timed it, 40 seconds. So this randomized trial shows that all you need is 40 seconds of compassion to make a meaningful difference. Importantly, 40 seconds of compassion can be a powerful therapy for the giver too. And this is important because these data are not just applicable to healthcare workers, but to everyone here today. Science shows that compassion for others can have a direct positive effect on your own well-being. Neuroscience studies show that compassion for others can trigger reward pathways in the brain and positive emotion that can buffer or even counteract the activation of stress pathways and negative emotion. So, in effect, compassion for others can make you forget your own worries, at least temporarily. So now this is where the science meets the personal. A couple of years ago, after nearly 20 years of working in the ICU and meeting people on the worst day of their life, I came to a stark realization. I had almost every symptom of burnout. And let me assure you, that's not a good place to be. It can be a dark place. Currently, the recommended prescription for burnout is what I call escapism. Get away. Detach. Pull back. Go on some nature hikes or whatever. But I was not buying it because I believed that the antidote to burnout had to be at the point of care. In personal connection, human connection, not an escape. So what was I supposed to do? Well, I did the only thing I knew how to do. I took the research nerd approach. And armed with the data that 40 seconds of compassion can be a powerful therapy for the giver too, I decided to do an experiment on myself. I was the only research subject in this experiment. I was the N of one. So I tested the hypothesis that my 40 seconds of compassion would transform my experience. I connected more, not less. Cared more, not less. Leaned in rather than pulling back. And that was when the fog of burnout began to lift. My 40 seconds of compassion changed everything for me. Now you might be thinking, I'm speaking on the power of compassion. I must be the most compassionate doctor. But the truth, if I'm being honest, is that I'm still a work in progress. I'm working hard at compassion every day, but I see it now. And thankfully, science shows that change can happen. I used to think that people were either wired for compassion or they were not. But the preponderance of evidence in the scientific literature, both in healthcare workers and in the general population, shows quite clearly that compassionate behaviors can, in fact, be learned. And that is good news indeed. So now it's time to answer the big question that I posed to you at the beginning. Does compassion matter? My systematic review of the literature now complete, 1,000 scientific abstracts, 200 research manuscripts, and one life-changing N of one experiment behind me. I now conclude with confidence, compassion matters for patients, for patient care, and for those who care for patients. Compassionate care belongs in the domain of evidence-based medicine. I no longer believe in this paradigm behind me, this historical paradigm. I now believe in this one, because I found that there is science in the art of medicine, and the science is strong. I like to call this field compassionomics. It's the convergence of the science and the art of medicine. I will close just by acknowledging that you don't have to be a healthcare worker to feel burned out. And if you do, I suggest that you test the compassion hypothesis for yourself. Do your N of one experiment. Look and see those around you in need of compassion and give them your 40 seconds of compassion. See how it transforms your experience. But don't do it because I say so. Do it because science says so. 40 seconds of compassion can change everything for a patient. It changed everything for me. It can change everything for you too. And that is the power of 40 seconds. Thank you.
If you don't mind, okay, we can help each other to digest this because there's a lot of information. Can some of you, maybe one, two, three people, you know, help me summarize it, what you remember from this? Anyone, can you pass the microphone around? Or if you have a question, if you have a question about this. This is compassion from a scientist's point of view. Okay. Anyone, you know, do you remember? What do you remember? How do you conclude? I mean, what kind of conclusion you got from this? What do you understand? What about you?
I learned that compassion is something that we can learn and something that we can learn, and it's not originally with us. And all you need is 40 seconds to do that. And about 56% of physicians think that they don't have the time to do that. Yes, 40 seconds.
Thank you. Who else would like to help me? Okay, yeah, thank you. Can you pass your microphone to me?
So in the video it said that 40 seconds of compassion, it can make a meaningful difference, and that importantly it can be a powerful time or like therapy to both like the caregivers and the patients as well. So it's like a direct positive effect.
Even the cost, the care cost, the cost of care, that's the money that we spend on healthcare, treating. And?
I took a lot of notes.
Okay. Girls, what do you get out of this video? Can one of you kind of help to kind of, okay, refresh the memory? Okay, yeah, thank you.
It's different from sympathy and empathy, and it can make changes for both the caretaker and the patient.
I'd like to add to the point that you picked up. Compassion is different from sympathy and empathy. So sympathy, empathy, and compassion, what's the difference between them? So you can take note of this. That means you can sit down. You can take note of this. We can start with the sympathy up, okay? Sympathy is understanding of other people's pain, understanding of other people's problem. So if we, in a few minutes, we will be discussing the problem that this country face, then you can discuss them. When you discuss them, usually you would be using your IQ, your brain to think about this, meaning you understand the problem. But that's different from feeling the pain of other people. So feeling is called empathy. Sympathy is understanding of people's problem. Okay, empathy is feeling their pain. You put yourself in their shoes, in their place. If you want to hear a Pali word for this from the Buddha, it's called Adana Upamangatawa. That's from the Buddha. In the old English dictionaries, they don't get these distinctions because it's new research between meditation, neurology, and clinical psychology. Now, compassion is the highest. If you remember, you know, the definition of compassion at the beginning, what he said. Compassion is an emotional response to the pain of another with an authentic desire to help relieve it. Okay, I know it word by word from this video. I repeat again, compassion is an emotional response to someone's pain with a desire, with an authentic desire to help relieve it. Meaning, compassion involves taking action. You feel somebody's pain, but if you don't take any action to relieve it, to help it, you're not compassionate, you're just empathetic. Okay? You just have empathy towards them, you don't have compassion yet. For compassion, what you have to do, you have to start thinking, okay, how can I help? That's already compassion. That's, okay, what else? Can I hear from one or two more? Yes, please see.
I learned that the antidote to burnout is not escapism. It's not trying to escape or take a break from the stress that's causing you, but it's to personally connect to the world and to connect to other people on an emotional level that'll help you.
Through compassion.
Yeah, through compassion to get through the burnout.
This is a very important point because the Buddha, you know, we'll talk about in Burmese, we can say dukkha, dukkha, dukkha. Dukkha means suffering, it means pain, it means problem. Dukkha means. So the Buddha, he likes to confront problems, not run away from it. First by trying to understand it. To understand it. So this is the point that he makes. It's a very good one. If you want to note another point related to this, but not from this video, it's called the sources of stress. Sources of stress. Now for this doctor, the source of stress is the work environment. And his friend would say, detach, get away, go on nature, hide. And he didn't buy it. It has to be at the point of care. At the point of care means where the problem arises. That's a very good point. Very good. Can I hear from one more person? Okay, thank you. Okay, I can't hear you.
I learned that compassion is like a win-win situation, and because for the patients, it gives positive physiological effects, and also for the givers, it's not just giving them good feeling, but also from a neurological point of view, it opens stress reward pathways which can encounter stress pathways in the brain. So I think it's a win-win situation, compassion.
This neurological point is very important. Compassion triggers the neural pathway, the reward, okay, neural pathway. There is, as you know, adrenaline, cortisol, you know, they are all associated with stress. If you trigger them, then, okay, obviously you will have a lot of stress. And this can be explained easily from emotion, from Buddhist psychological point of view, and now from some neurology. And by engaging with other people's pain at the emotional level through compassion, actually, not only that it doesn't exhaust you, actually it energizes you. That's what it says. Thank you. Yeah.
One thing I learned about compassion is that compassion matters because it impacts self-care itself. And although 58% of the researchers believe there is no time for compassion, time it
plays... It's not research, it's a physician.
Time is also efficient that can help and impact compassion in like some kind of ways.
The point here, what you picked up, is very good. What they say, I mean, 56% of physicians from Harvard think they don't have time for compassion. So this professor, Professor Stephen Treiser is his name, he asked a question, how much time do you need? So how much time? 40 seconds. You need as little as 40 seconds to offer compassionate expression towards a patient. Okay, with this, before we do meditation, I want to do some intellectual exercise because I want to use compassion as motivation. Compassion and motivation, I want to write. Who has got? Oh no! Can I have this book, the yellow book? Compassion Focused Therapy. I'm going to use this book, Compassion Focused Therapy. This is a clinical psychologist's writing that I practice actually. You have three models of focus. The first one is thread focus. Where to erase this one. Okay. Thread focus. This is one focus. Another one is called incentive focus. Incentive focus. Thread focus is when your conscious mind and subconscious mind mainly focus on threat. Okay, if I don't get a grade, people are going to kind of have negative view on me. That kind of fear is fear-based. Fear-based. And before you go out, you know, when you dress up, you think about people's opinion, if they're going to have a healthy opinion about you, about how you dress up. That kind of thing is called threat focus. Your mind is focusing on threat all the time, on danger all the time, on negative things all the time. If this is the case, you are activating amygdala. This is the part of the brain that you activate. It's at the back of your mind, your brain, the old brain. The animals also have this. And very easily, you can produce adrenaline and cortisol. So you will be in the loop. You will have a vicious circle. You fear that people wouldn't recognize you in the society, that you wouldn't have, you wouldn't impress people. People wouldn't accept you. That sort of thing. You know, you focus on fear, on threat. The second one, incentive focus. This is reward. This reward. If your parents tell you, okay, you work hard. If you get this, if you pass this, okay, I'm going to give you this, I'm going to buy you this. I'm going to buy. If that's the case, okay, your mind is on something that you're going to get, on the reward, on the incentive. This creates a lot of desire. So you want something, you work hard for it, you got it, you spend it, and you want something for it again because you have developed a habit of wanting something. Okay. Look how we develop a habit of wanting delicious food. And how much we can enjoy. We cannot enjoy for one meal. We cannot tolerate if the same menu repeats itself. If you think your lunch is very good today, if I ask your parent to prepare exactly the same lunch tomorrow, you might not enjoy it as much. The ability to enjoy is it lasts just one meal. What's wrong with the food? There's nothing wrong. Still gives the same vitamins and nutrition. What has changed? Your perception of the food has changed. So this is the shortcoming of the incentive focus. Yesterday I mentioned a little bit, but in my evening Dhamma talk I mentioned at length that in the Nordic countries, including Denmark, Norway, in the school they don't have prizes, they don't have reward system. Instead, they have empathy lessons. And they don't have homework. You see, the good thing, they don't have homework. When you compete for a prize, you put unnecessary pressure on yourself. But why people do that? Why people, you know, follow that system? That's because they want to motivate you. They think you are not strong enough to motivate yourself. So to motivate you, they want to give you something. They use incentive system. Sometimes they threaten you. If you don't get a degree, your life is going to be like this, going to be like that, people are going to look down on you, you're not going to be a success. That sort of fear that they instill in you. That's called threat focus or incentive focus. Another one that we can use, which is compassion, is called affiliative focus. Affiliative focus. You feel affiliated, okay? Affiliative focus. Affiliative focus. This is compassion. The hormone that it produces when we have compassion focus is oxytocin. Oxytocin is a different hormone from the other two focuses. Then, what's the affiliative focus? This is where I want to have you. Yeah. You use program to motivate yourself. You use program to motivate yourself. I know you study because you want a good grade, because you want to go to a good uni so that you graduate, so that you can, build a good life after that. That's called self-centered. You center on yourself. You focus on yourself. According to these studies, if you do that, you are prone to stress and anxiety, even fear. A lot of fear of failure. Fear of failure. You will always compare yourself with other people. If you compare yourself with other people, what would be the end result? One is, when you think you do better, you feel superior. Superiority complex is complexity. If you think somebody is doing better than you, you feel inferior. The inferiority complex. That's in psychology. Those complexities, they are not healthy. They create a lot of a negative reaction in the mind. So what do we do then? We can use problem to motivate ourselves, like the Buddha. He focused on other people's problem and he wanted to help them. So he worked for that. That's how he came up. How he achieved, what he did. I'm saying that, okay, if you are interested in, say, in IT, look at what kind of problem we have in this country without good IT. Specialty without good IT knowledge. I have given workshop many times in the MICT Park, the hub of IT business in Myanmar. When it comes to more advanced technology, this you have to seek help, okay, from other country, joint venture. We need a lot. People are moving to AI and they're moving to version 2, 5.0, 4.0, 5.0. And we are still, far behind. So if you can use this, if you want to help this country with its IT problem, because without good IT technology, people are not achieving their potential. They are suffering economically, financially, even psychologically. So if you feel their pain, to understand their pain is called sympathy. To feel their pain, the pain of the people, is called empathy. To really want to help them is called compassion. So if you're interested in IT, can you raise your hands? Anyone? Okay. Anyone interested in business study, can you raise your hand? Okay. In philosophy? No. Okay, one philosophy. In medicine? Okay, in engineering? In arts? Okay. In pure sciences, like physics, chemistry, biology? Biomedicine? Okay. Thank you. We need everything in this country. If you look at the doctors, some specialists who have been trained in America and in England, they have a long queue in their clinic. For one patient, maybe they can give about 3 minutes. That's not enough to diagnose a patient. They might make a mistake. They have to see the patient sometime past midnight. How can you work like that? Why? That's because we are short of specialists. Even those specialists, they don't get support to update themselves. Medicine is moving very fast. So if you look at the problem in the healthcare and you want to be part of the solution, then you think about the problem, how those problems affect the people, and start thinking about the solution. Can I group you by your interests, and we start discussing in terms of compassion, how you're going to call them in terms of what they're interested in. Say, can you bring IT people here and us over there, sign over there? Can you help me, please?
So guys, engineering, who would love to do engineering, come to this site, right? To this site, and then art here. I remember, right? Engineer, can you guys get up now? And maybe you guys will sit later in a formation. So, get up, guys. So, engineering, this side.
Engineering, come to my side, please.
Art, this side. Art here. Doctors, medications, this side.
Okay. Hello? Whoever wants to do computer science, can you come here?
Computer science here. Philosophy here.
And then whoever wants to do business, come to this first corner.
Business is way at the top corner.
Business here. Philosophy. Computer science here.
It's philosophy.
Guys, you guys can bring your chairs, okay? And you guys can sit in a circle.
Yeah, bring your chairs and sit in a circles, okay? Business is way at the top. All right? Way at the right top.
Skylar. Mitenji.
But
law student, they are here. Law.
A law student. Law students stay here between arts and medications. Law students stay here. Bring your chair so you guys can sit. Guys, bring your chairs. Arts here. Huh? You can stand, or if you want to sit, you guys can take your chairs. Yeah. Only if you want to say, okay? many damn artists are there? Shut up, you're like, you guys stand in a circle, please. Just stand in a circle. And the medication students stand in a circle here. And then law.
Can you listen to my instruction? Okay, we are going to use, do we still have the chart, the flip chart? Okay, I want to give this to them. I want them to brainstorm about the problem. Okay, just bring list the problem, and then what kind of solution, okay, you think you can be, you can come up with, you can be part of. Using your interest. The volunteers, please, you know, guide them and be part of.
You guys can, I'll give you papers, right? Because you guys don't need a board for two of people, right? I'll give you papers.
So guys, you have to like your topic that relate to how, like there's gonna be a problem and you have to like try to solve the problem.
Like, is there any more computer science people? You guys, if you're computer science, you have to come here, okay?
Like it will be like a problem in a like certain country.
Hold it.
Hello. Hi guys, sorry to interrupt, but like, Popon thinks that these are kind of like a big group, so you guys can answer. Medication.
Where's the group for PSI?
Guys, is there anyone that's interested in just pure science, not computer science, not medicine, chemistry, physics, and stuff? Yeah, biology.
Hi guys, you guys have 10 more minutes to do your problems, according to Popo. 10 more minutes, guys.
Guys, we have 6 more minutes. I announced it just now. Hi. Okay. Hey guys, so we have 6 minutes left for this. Then after this, 5 now, and then we'll be doing a compassion meditation for about 5 minutes. Then we'll be having presentations for your designated groups. And we'll be picking out which groups will get to present as we cannot provide time for everyone. Thank you.
next to Taco Bell.
Guys, you guys only have 1 minute left to prepare, and Pompo would like each one of you guys to talk if you guys are on the stage, so prepare something to say.
You still got money, but like, it's a lot of money.
No.
You guys are wise.
Yeah. Your seat.
What? I thought.
Come on.
Guys, time's up. Can you guys return to your seats so that Pompo can teach you guys compassion meditation? Never mind, you guys have a break.
Yeah, you guys have a break for 15 minutes right now. Start from now. So till 2, you guys can hang out around, go to the toilet. Thank you. Please back by 2, okay?